Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another amazing episode of the Muscle Expert Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Pakulski. Today has absolutely nothing to do with muscle building, but it has everything to do with finding how to live your greatest life, how to create happiness, what happiness really means, how to determine our values, which become our guiding light in life. This was one of the most mind-blowing conversations I have ever had in my entire life. Dr. John DeMartini joins me today to talk about things that go well beyond where I believe this conversation would go when I started. And this might be one of the most intelligent human beings on the planet with the most complete conversations around understanding human consciousness, why we're here, and really how to identify your greatness and live a happy, fulfilling life. Most importantly, getting rid of those things that are preventing you from living your greatest life. Dr. DeMartini and I have a good 60-minute conversation about the 13 determinants of value, how to really identify those things by looking at the current situations in your life. And then we start getting into some really interesting stuff around his current evolution of thought and our place in the universe, human consciousness evolution, even talking about his latest book around cosmology, the origins of the universe and the expansion of the universe. And that stuff is a small part of the conversation, but it's a relevant part of the conversation. And if you're someone who likes to have your paradigm challenged by someone who is extremely bright and not woo-woo in any way, this guy's literally just, you know, connecting the dots around what's happening in the universe, what's happening in our mind. And he's reading everything under the sun on how we can expand our consciousness framed around maximizing human consciousness, right? So it's not just, hey, I'm going to read everything because it's interesting. He's trying to maximize our time on this universe. And without a shadow of a doubt, this is one of the most interesting, thought-provoking conversations. So a few tips for this podcast. Do not listen to it on high speed because it'll blow your mind open. You got to listen to it on normal speed, speed 1.0. You may want to take some notes because he drops a lot of names and a lot of really interesting conversations around things that, you know, words you may not have heard and things that are going to be outside of the realm of day-to-day conversation. And then as always, if you enjoy the episode, I highly recommend you reach out to Dr. DeMartini, who spends 365 days a year on the road teaching people this stuff. And I would love to have you share this with at least one person who you know is trying to live their greatest life in their greatest body. Because as far as I can see, this is step one in beginning to live your happiness on this planet. Enjoy the episode. Have an amazing day. Live your greatest life in your greatest body. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, the Muscle Expert Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Pakulski, and today I have the tremendous honor and privilege of speaking to Dr. John DeMartini. This gentleman's got so many books that are changing people's lives that I will mention at the end of the podcast and link to in the show notes. But the most important thing that we're going to speak about today is the values factor, which is his most recent book, and how essential this is to allowing us to truly start tapping into our greatness. Dr. DeMartini, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Like I said before we got on the call, I'm truly grateful for your time because, you know, after spending a good amount of time on your website and researching a lot of your stuff, what you're doing, you know, you're truly carving out a niche and allowing people to identify what's important to them so that they can start identifying how to guide their life. And a lot of people live a life of confusion and aimless wandering. And I think the system you've started implementing allows people to truly first identify what's important to them and then, you know, hopefully start carving out their destiny and their path. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, every human being, regardless of age, gender, or culture, lives by a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most important to least important in their life. Now, this set of values evolves as they evolve. And decade by decade, you can see a tweaking or sometimes cataclysmic change in this list. Pardon me one second.
Sure.
I wasn't expecting that phone.
That's all right.
And this set of values is unique to them. And it's like a fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And the whatever's highest on their list of values, the very highest, they're intrinsically inspired to do. So this is an intrinsic value, and they're spontaneously inspired from within to do. And they require no outside motivation, no incentives, no reminding to do this. But as you go down the list of values, you require ever greater degrees of extrinsic motivation to get them to do it.
Correct.
Just like a young boy who's, say 12 years old, if he loves his video games, nothing needs to be reminding him to do it. He just does them. But he may need to be reminded to do his homework or chores. Now, the second a person sets goals, intentions, and prioritizes actions according to what they value most, they have the highest probability of achievement. They have the highest probability of stamina. They'll expand their space and time horizons and give themselves permission to do something greater. They automatically increase their self-worth. They automatically get blood glucose and oxygen into the forebrain, which is the executive center, where they can see inspiring visions, execute plans, strategically plan, and have self-governance and mastery. In other words, living by what's highest on your value is one of the great keys to great achievement. If we get the highest value and we set sail for that, we become captain of our ship, master of our fate and destiny. So identifying what is truly most important to you, because if you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, your life is designed to fill up with low priority distractions that don't, as a feedback to let you know you're not being authentic, because your most authentic identity revolves around what you value most. We want to be loved and appreciated for what we value most. So identifying what those values are, setting sail accordingly, according to the highest priority one, raises self-worth and raises achievement. So that's why values are so crucial in the mastery of life.
I love the word you brought up right there. And this is a word that's come into my paradigm and my worldview very recently, authenticity. So we all live, this life of seeking. We're trying to find our true path as human beings. And we're trying to find out what truly makes us happy and what truly makes us feel fulfilled. And it seems as though that's the answer, right? And, you need to find out how to live your most authentic life. And obviously to find out how to live your most authentic life, the first step to that is identifying who you are and what your value system is. What are the steps you recommend people start going down to start identifying that? Because it seems as though it's pretty vague unless someone were to come up with a system and identify it.
Well, I've been working with values for over 4 decades. Mm-hmm. And I am certain if you just asked a general person on the street, what is it that your life demonstrates that you value most? Most of the time, they will subordinate to outer authorities, mothers, fathers, preachers, teachers, or collective authorities, peer pressure, traditions, conventions, mores. And they'll tell you what they think you want to hear. And they'll say kind of ideologies and idealisms about the way life is supposed to be instead of what their life demonstrates. But your life demonstrates your values, because every decision you make is based on what you believe at any one moment will give you the greatest advantage over disadvantage, greatest reward over risk to your highest values. Your brain is a heuristic analyzer of risk, reward, and benefit over drawback. And it's going to make sure that you make decisions based on what you think is going to give you the greatest advantage. Now, this is according to what you value most. So a mother is going to make decisions based on her children. The video game player is going to make decisions based on his video games. Now, if I ask somebody what their values are, I guarantee you, I've been doing this so long, that majority of people are going to tell you what is ideal, not what their life demonstrates. Just like most people will tell you, oh, I want to be financially independent, but no matter what they do, they keep buying consumables that depreciate in value instead of buying assets that put money in their pocket.
Absolutely.
So the first thing I did when I tried to discern what exactly is the key to identifying what their life demonstrates as valuables, I realized that there were 13 primary determinants And I compiled those, and I've been using them now for many years. In fact, on my website, there's a complimentary application that a person can log on to and do. It takes about 30 minutes. Yep. But I look at how do they fill their space? Because things that are extremely important to you, keep around you, and things that aren't, you throw in the trash or get away from you. So things that are proximal and close to you are valuable. Things that are not, you push away. So your space reveals, your personal and intimate space reveal a lot about what you value. The second is your time. You make time, find time, and spend time things on things that are extremely valuable to you and run out of time and don't want to make time and don't want to spend time on things that aren't. The third one is what energizes you. When you're doing things that are high in your values, you have more energy at the end of it than you started. And when you're doing things low in your value, you're drained. So that tells you it. The another one is how you spend your money. The hierarchy of your values determines how you spend your money. And so look at where most of your money is, second most and third most tells you a lot about what your values are. Then I look at where you're most organized, because you tend to bring great order to things that are valuable to you and disorder to things that aren't. I look at where you're disciplined most, because you're spontaneously inspired to act on your highest values. And so you're automatically perceived as disciplined in that area. Nobody has to remind me to get up and research and teach. I do it every single day. And I've been doing it for 46 years almost. So there's no motivation needed to do that. If you require motivation to do what you say is important, what you say is important isn't important. So look at where you're disciplined. The next one is, what do you think about? What do you visualize about? And what do you internally dialogue with yourself about most, about how you would love your life to be, that shows evidence of coming true? If there's no evidence of those things coming true, and it's not what you would love to have happen, then those are not high on your values. So I look at, what do you keep thinking about, keep visualizing, and keep talking to yourself about most, about how you want your life, that shows evidence coming true. The next value determinant is exactly, what is it you keep wanting to bring the conversations to? So if you walk up to somebody, some people will come up to you and say, how's your kids? How's your investments? How's your health? How's your business? They want to talk about what's valuable to them. What do you want to keep talking about? And if you get to talk about it, you'll talk all night about it. And it'll liven you up and wake you up if you get to talk about it. The next one is, what inspires you? And what's common to the people who inspire you? So in my case, it's studying the laws of the universe. I see the universe as a giant jigsaw puzzle. And every time I find another piece that fits in the puzzle, it inspires me. Every time I get to go to another country and share that with another group of people, that inspires me. And when I meet people that do extraordinary things and overcome amazing odds, that inspires me. What inspires you? What is it brings a tear of inspiration to your eyes that absolutely inspires you? The next one is, what are the three most persistent and consistent goals that you're pursuing that are showing evidence of coming true? And the last one is, what is you can't wait to study, read about, learn about, listen to, or watch videos of most? If you look at and answer all of those 13 determinants, three top answers, you will see that the same answers repeatedly show up. And the ones that show up most frequent is the highest value, second most frequent is second, and third most frequent is the third. And identifying the top three, in particular the top one value, tells you what your identity revolves around and where you're headed. And your mission and your purpose in life is a reflection and expression of that highest value.
I love this. And I went through all this stuff on your website, and I'll link to that in the show notes. The first thing that came to mind as you're walking through all these things is this something that's intrinsically present and established, or is this something that we can learn to begin to adjust, manipulate, and influence?
Well, if we meet somebody that we think is more intelligent than us, more successful than us, has more wealth than us, has a more stable relationship or a more attractive spouse than us, is more influential, has more beauty or health than us, or more inspired or spiritually aware than us, as long as we perceive this and we imagine them having something we don't, and we're too humble to admit what we see in them is inside ourselves, we'll tend to subordinate to them and live in their shadows instead of stand on their shoulders. And we'll tend to inject other people's values into our life and cloud the clarity of our own highest value. And then we'll end up scattering ourselves and diffusing ourselves, trying to be somebody we're not. And that's like a cat trying to master swimming, or a fish trying to master climbing is self-defeating. We're not here to live in people's shadows. We're here to be authentic to ourselves. We're not here to compare ourselves to other people. We're here to compare our daily actions to our own highest value and dreams. And that's the difference. And many people dilute themselves and dilute their power and weigh themselves down with emotional baggage, beating themselves up because they're trying to be somebody they're not. We're not here to live outside our own values. We're not here to fit in. We're here to stand out, to express our difference and uniqueness. That's how we make the greatest difference.
Dr. DeMartini, do you run into a lot of people who have a really well-established life? Maybe they're, you know, externally successful, but who are living this disconnected life and they're not congruent with their value systems? And if so, how do you recommend people start changing? Because I feel a lot of us are living this life that we believed in the past to be the path to our happiness. And then you get there and you're like, hey, you know, this isn't quite what I thought it was going to be. It's not quite as fulfilling as I thought it was going to be. What do you recommend the first step that these people take in toward, you know, obviously identifying their values? And then from there, how do they start truthfully shifting their life?
Well, if we're attempting to live in somebody else's values, we can't sustain it, first of all. It's just like if you meet a very beautiful girl and you're highly infatuated. In the first few weeks while you're infatuated, you'll probably sacrifice some of the things you normally do in a day to do the things that you think she wants to do or things that are important to her. And then in the process of doing it, you'll eventually fade from those activities back to your own behavior. So during infatuating moments, we can try to live by other people's values, but it's self-defeating, and we eventually want to be loved for who we are, and we want to go back to what's meaningful to us. So we can't sustain living in other people's values without internal conflict and physiological responses. So when we are thinking what's important to us is based on other people's values, we're going to end up having this self-defeating perspective. But what our own decisions are based on our own values. And sometimes what we're actually doing is according to our own values, but we're expecting to be doing something else. I've asked, you know, millions of people as I've traveled the world, sometimes 10,000 people at a time, how many of you want to be financially independent? And everybody will put their hand up. And then I'll put in the room, how many of you are financially independent? And most hands go down because many people live in a fantasy. They want financial independence, but in their hierarchy of values, they have a desire for immediate gratification and buying consumables that depreciate in value instead of buying assets that go up in value. So as long as they are living in a fantasy of somebody else's values, but actually, you know, trying to be this wealthy person when they don't have the value structure that will lead them to it, they'll beat themselves up thinking there's something wrong with them. So they're living according to their own values, but they're fantasizing according to other people that they've injected. And this is where the conflict comes in. So you have two choices in life. You can either go and do what you really love and delegate lower priority things and grow your self-worth and become efficient and then engage other people in jobs and they help the economy by doing something that's meaningful, that serves people, that gives you income, that pays for the delegations. Or you can take the things that you're doing temporarily until you can delegate and link it to what you value most and ask how specifically is doing this action going to help me fulfill what I value? And if I can answer that numerous times, I'll make links in the brain and neuroplastically alter the brain. And so I can become engaged and inspired in those activities that I know will be helpful to me. So either you do what you love through delegating or love what you do through linking is a way you do it because there's no fulfillment in life unless there's congruency between intention and highest value. And so the mastery of that is the mastery of questions or prioritizations.
Hey, so what do you think about the podcast so far with Dr. DeMartini? Absolutely mind-blowing. This gentleman is incredible, and you've got so much more great information coming at you in just a minute. But first, I want to bring you a special message from our sponsor, Four Sigmatic. So Four Sigmatic is leading the mushroom movement, and the mushroom movement is real. Mushrooms are upgrading our biology, upgrading our physiology in ways like nothing else on the planet. So the one that I'm most interested in, I've been using aggressively for 6 months, twice a day, is lion's mane because of the research around upgrading your brain, upgrading BDNF, upgrading your brain's ability to form new pathways. So as we age, it's been suggested that our brains are hardwired, but we now know that we can actually improve our brain's neuroplasticity and learn new things faster. And lion's mane has been something that's been shown to actually accelerate that process. So I've been experimenting with it and I absolutely love it. It goes in my coffee every morning, 3 grams, add 15 mls of MCT, add a little bit of alpha GPC, and you are wired and ready to go for the day. On top of that, I'm using some reishi. I'm using cordyceps now to help improve my endurance to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. So if you're someone who's doing any type of endurance training, cordyceps is something you guys want to consider. For Sigmatics also got mushroom coffee mixes. They've got adaptogen coffee. They've got mocha coffee. They've got decaf. They've got literally every type of mushroom mix you could ever want. But definitely check out Lion's Mane, reishi, and cordyceps. I've also been a fan of chaga, which I put into my routine when I feel a little run down, when I'm traveling, or when I'm training really hard and feel like my immune system needs a little kick in the pants. So if you want to check this out, you guys can get 15% off for Sigmatic by going to forsigmatic.com/muscle, and I'll link to it in the show notes. Remember, the discount code is muscle to get 15% off at forsigmatic. I hope you enjoy this episode. Live your greatest life in your greatest body, and fire Dr. DeMartini some feedback on this episode, because this guy is blowing up people's minds across the world every day. I appreciate you all. Have an amazing day and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Do you think this is an important step or something you've started integrating in families and businesses? Because it sounds to me like, I guess I should ask the question, how important is it that the people around you have parallel or congruent value systems?
Well, no two people have the same set of values. If any two people are exactly the same, one wouldn't be necessary on the planet. In the family dynamic, you're going to have complementary opposite values, just like the genes are complementary opposite between husband and wife's genes. So you're going to have the complementary opposites. The key is to learn how to ask yourself, how specifically is what they're dedicated to helping you fulfill what you're dedicated to? And how specifically what you're dedicated to helping them fulfill what they're dedicated to? It's not about getting their values to be yours or yours to be theirs. That's futile. It's about finding out how what they're dedicated and what is their value is serving you, and how vice versa, yours is serving them. That way you have a dialogue instead of an alternating monologue in communication. And that way you can help them fulfill what they want, is they can turn around and help you fulfill what you want without losing who they are in the manner and process.
I love that. Now, the 13 value determinants, there's a lot of really great questions here that seem as though they'll give relatively self-explanatory answers. You know, how do you fill your space? How do you fill your time? What gives you energy? What do you spend your money on? Those are pretty self-explanatory. But you look at things like where are you most organized? Where are you most disciplined? What if someone listening doesn't have a very clear answer to that question?
Well, I've been doing this for decades. So yeah. I hear people in my seminar, the Breakthrough Experience Program, which I've done 1,135 times. Wow. I've done that, and I hear that every week, and I've never found it to be true.
I believe it.
The only reason why people think they can't think of it, of what they're organized in or disciplined in, is because they're comparing themselves to other people that they admire and think, oh, I don't have discipline in that area, so I don't have discipline. And so the reality is they do. It's just they may have discipline and making sure that they're in front of the TV at 8 o'clock every single night. They may be disciplined on their makeup. They may be disciplined in their clothes. They may be disciplined in how they eat. They may be disciplined on their physical fitness routine or their social connections with people on Facebook. I don't know what it is, but we need to identify what it is to look at what they truly value, because they have it. It's not missing. I have yet to find one person that honestly didn't have a hierarchy of values and have a discipline. It's just not what they are fantasizing it should be. Whenever you hear yourself saying, I should, I ought to, I suppose to, I got to, I have to, I must, which are imperative injunctions of other authorities, that tells you you're trying to live by other people's values instead of what you would love to do, what you choose to do, and what you desire to do. That's a sign you're living intrinsically from within.
This truthfully feels like the number one step to happiness, Dr. DeMartini. How did you begin to walk down the path of learning to understand this stuff? Obviously, you're an extremely well-read, well-studied person. What were the catalysts for you to start understanding this process, you know, what it seems like better than anyone else on the planet?
Well, I've been working on this for 46 years almost, so I've been doing it a bit. But what I'm interested in, I'm not interested in the pursuit. Aristotle described happiness in two fashions. There's a hedonistic happiness, which is transient and bipolar in nature, mm-hmm. a search for pleasure and a search for ease and sort of a passionate, search for a one-sided outcome in life. And then an eudaimonic one that is embracing both sides of life and having true fulfillment. I'm not interested in immediate gratification at the expense of long-term fulfillment. So I'm not looking for quick happiness or quick fantasies or super pleasures and hedonistic pursuits, because the hedonistic adaptation in our brain won't allow us to stay that way. We'll automatically neutralize that through time, and like a thermostat will get us back into our temperature. But I am interested in looking for something that's meaningful. That distinguishes us from the animals. The animals are easily looking as a dopamine fix to avoid predator and seek prey and avoid pain and seek pleasure. But the human being is able to embrace pain and pleasure in the pursuit of a purpose, something that's meaningful, the telos, as Aristotle called it. And it's this that allows them to stand out and make something of a contribution to humanity. It allows them to pursue challenges that inspire them to originate and innovate creative genius expressions. It's the unborrowed visionary when you're pursuing that, not the borrowed visionaries from society trying to fit in and basically becoming sheep. It's about being the shepherd. And I think we all have the capacity to do it. I've certainly trained thousands and thousands of people on how to do that. And the moment they do, they become inspired by life and not living quiet lives of desperation. And they do the extraordinary instead of living the ordinary box bound by the constraints of their own subordinations.
You say that you continue to travel the world and educate, but you also say you continue to study and research every day. It seems like, to be honest, I thought we'd have a 2-hour long conversation about these value systems, but it seems like it's pretty concrete. Like the things you've identified are so apparent and so obvious. You've answered that question. What is your greatest area of interest and focus now? As you it feels like you've kind of transcended this understanding of these values, and now you're working on to, the next step in understanding, as you say, the laws of the universe.
Well, when I was 17 years old, I met an amazing teacher named Paul Bragg. He inspired me one night in 1 hour with one message. And I had a dream at that time to overcome my learning problems, because I didn't know how to read until I was 18. I had learning problems. And I never thought until that night I met him that I'd ever be an intelligent person. Never thought I would be able to speak very well because I had speech impediment. And I was kind of born with some deformities. And I was inspired that night. And I set out to study what he called universal laws, universal principles. And I didn't know what that really meant at first, but I looked it up and started reading dictionaries. And I was looking for, what I did is I made a list of every known discipline and ology that a person could study. And I got through the dictionary and encyclopedia and listed them all. And then what I did is I said, all right, I'm gonna go ahead and study at least 100 books on each ology, and that'll be a goal to keep me busy for a while. And I figured that a PhD would be equivalent of that, at least 100 books in each ology. And so I started doing that to try to find the most universal principles that stand the test of time relating to human behavior. In the process of doing that, that's what I wanted to build a foundation of teaching from. And so I have a fascination with many different disciplines, but all of it relates to the evolution of human consciousness and expansion of awareness and potential as a human being on planet Earth. So all of them, whether I'm studying astrophysics and I'm studying nucleosynthesis and how minerals are created on the planet and in the universe to make up enzymes, to catalyze us, to have vitality, or whether I'm studying mythological constructs to look at the archetypes inside the human psyche, everything that I study is all related to how to maximize the human expression. And so I don't have a boundary on those studies. Right now I'm finishing up a 600-page textbook on cosmology because I want to understand the origin of the universe as it relates to the origin of life forms. And so that relates to human behavior because that entire evolutionary pathway, or if you will, creative pathway, it has an impact on our goals and destiny in life based on the magnitude of space and time we hold in our mind. If we live day to day like a factory worker, we'll play small. But if we're an inspired visionary, we may think in terms of a millennium or millennium. It all depends on the magnitude of how big a vision we're willing to give ourselves. And the more congruent we are, the bigger that vision becomes.
Can you give us some insights onto how cosmology is influencing human consciousness?
Well, just the questions. You have two basic models in cosmology. One is a finite and one is an infinite. One is a transient universe that has a beginning and an end, and one's an eternal recycling universe that goes on potentially for eternity. And both of those are representations of what Immanuel Kant called the immanent mind and the transcendent mind within the human being. The immanent mind is like the animal mind that's basically reflexive, that is a reflex from predator and prey and external circumstances. And the inner one is the conceptual abstraction of the transcendent mind that conceives of infinity and conceives of mathematical abstractions and thinks in terms of eternity. And so these are, when we live by our highest values, we move into the conceptual abstractions of the transcendent mind, the soul of what people called it. When we live by our lower values, we want immediate gratification and we start thinking in terms of finite immediate needs. So our space and time horizons based on how congruent we are with our own highest values or lower values. And that's so our cosmology is a reflection, an expression of human beings studying it. If you study each of the writers on cosmology, you can see where they're perceiving it from, where they're perceiving it from something that they're inspired by, or they're perceiving it as a job and a duty. It shows up in the way they write the articles and what they write the textbooks or do their PhD papers on.
I think it'd be important for us to begin to identify or at least articulate a definition of what cosmology means and what our listeners need to know when you refer to cosmology.
Well, there's two terms. There's cosmogony, which is the origin of the universe, which gives us constructs like Big Bang theories and cyclic theories and plasma theories and lambda theories. And then there's also cosmology, which is the study of the universe itself. Not necessarily the infrastructures, but the actual general theme of the universe. And it could be from the microwave background, could be supergalactic clusters, filaments, it could be different things. But the cosmology is the study of the universe itself. That is probably the most abstract mathematical explorations to stretch and develop the human mind that's been ever conceived of. Because it utilizes everything that it takes for the brain to maximize its functions. So that's why I think entertaining that is a very useful thing for the human mind, because it allows it to think outside the box. You know, if you live day to day, you're not going to have the same life as if you hold a vision for beyond your life. I always say that, the magnitude of space and time determines the level of conscious evolution you've obtained. And if you want to make a difference in yourself, you need a vision that's at least as big as your family. You want to make a difference in your family, you need a vision as big as your community. You want to make a difference in your community, you need a vision as big as your city. You want to make a difference in your city, you need a vision as big as your state. If you want to make a difference in your state, you need a vision as big as your nation. You want to make a difference in the nation and be number one in the nation, you need a global vision. And if you want to make a global impact, you need an astronomical vision. And therefore, the study of astrophysics and astronomy helps you. Kind of like Elon Musk and Richard Branson, they're playing in a cosmic view, allows him. Even Rupert Murdoch, I was having dinner with one night, and I asked him how he created his empire. He said, I hold a globe in my hand, I spin it around, and I say, what message do I want to bring to what part of this little planet today? He's having a celestial view, not a terrestrial perspective. The terrestrial world is the world of trial, where we live in by learning from trial and error. But the celestial view is for visionaries, unborrowed visionaries that have visions of what they want to make a difference in the planet with. I'd rather go from that perspective and teach people how to live there.
Brilliant. So knowing your level of intellect and how much you've dived into this, what do you feel that this is completely an obscure question, but what do you feel the actual value or the impact of a human race is in this cosmic reality? Like what role do we actually play from what your research has found? Do you have any opinions on that?
Absolutely. I love that question. So just we'll have fun on the answer here.
Absolutely.
If probing into the infinite micro down to Planck's dimension, which is the smallest mathematical domain we have, we seem like giants. We seem like the whole universe. As we approximate the infinite micro with our awareness, we become like the infinite macro in our influence. But if we go out and expand out to the infinite macro, beyond the observable universe, into the most cosmological theories we can, we become an infinitesimal, and we become insignificant. And I think it's wise to have both in your awareness. That's why studying the micro and the macro to their fullest lengths, to the infinity, or at least to the observables, and at least to Planck's limitations, I think by studying that, I think it exercises the mind and gives you a new perspective and allows you to know what you're capable of doing and targets you on what's really inspiring to you.
How much have you dived into the reality that lives outside of our five senses? And what perspective can you give us into what you see or what you feel exists outside of our five senses? So I think so many of us live within this construct of, hey, this is what I can see, hear, smell, you know, and touch. And without this, nothing else exists. Obviously, we know now that's well beyond the reality. What have you experienced and what do you think exists that is relevant to us?
Well, the five senses are very limited. I mean, we only have a certain nanometer range that we can see. We have 30 to 30,000 cycles a second that we can hear, basically. Smell is very limited, and many times we have anosmia because of some of the smells we've had. And our taste buds are fluctuating based on emotions. And our tactile is limited by what we can reach out for and touch. So those five senses are only one. That's a small subset of the 109 senses that I've identified. We have our talk-thinness sense, which is basically tonofibral tensions between cells we can identify. We have navigational sense with place and grid cells for space and time. We have magnetic sense at the mitochondrial level. We have 105 other senses that most people have to be trained to understand. And then each of these senses can be extended by microscopes and telescopes. And even within those boundaries, it's still a bounded universe to us. And even though Wheeler says that, you know, conscious measurement creates a new reality for us, there's truth in that, but it's still finite. Therefore, the empirical world is limited and elusive at best. Now, outside those boundaries, we have theories. And the theoretical outside that is necessary for us to broaden our minds to open up the boundaries and continue to live with holy curiosity and keep pursuing the mysteries. The solutions to the mysteries is what all great Nobel Prize winners and all great thinkers have pursued, great philosophers. So we have to live at the boundary. As Giordano Bruno did, he basically believed that outside the boundary of the celestial world, there was a something even beyond, something infinite. And I think that that's a necessary component for us to contemplate that, because otherwise we would never escape our boundaries and our senses. And by no means are they even conceived to be anything but limited. So I think that we have an inner mind, kind of like a bodhisattva inside, that's capable of going inside and integrating, theoretically at least, abstractions that go beyond our perceptions into conceptualizations for the future. And I do my best to try to do that on a daily basis. It was Sir Isaac Newton that played in that field, and Einstein said it's enough for me on a daily basis to sit in awe before the intelligence, a panpsychic intelligence that permeated the universe. So I'm a firm believer that that's an essential component of making us distinct from the animal, because they can only reflect what's observed with their senses, and we have the capacity to reflect upon reflections.
One of the questions I wanted to ask is, how did you begin to create a framework around what avenue to pursue? But I think even the question of asking about a framework is maybe a limited paradigm for me. Like, what do you use as kind of your guiding light to guide your thought process? Because it seems as though there's an infinite number of considerations you're making when you're going down these paths of studying, all the intricate relevancies in the universe.
Well, I, the way you called it, the intricate relevancies is a beautiful language. What it is I'm interested in maximizing human awareness and potential. That's it. So in the evolution of human consciousness, the involvement of being aware of the intelligence that's here. Okay. So anything that relates to that is inspiring to me. And I guide that by that question. In any one day, I may study many different disciplines, but it's all related to that one thing. And I organize my knowledge. I don't just study. Everything I study is organized and put in a particular place, so it's structured in such a manner that I can utilize it to serve people with. And I utilize it in a way that is pass-onable, you might say, something to pass the torch to somebody. So I don't just read for the sake of reading. I read to organize knowledge, to put together a giant cosmological puzzle that enhances the person's experience of being human.
Wow. Coming back a little bit to what we said is the laws of the universe. Are there, assuming I don't know the answer, and I'm assuming my audience doesn't know the answer, are there immutable laws of the universe that, you know, governing our reality or governing our existence?
Well, that's a good question. And this is a philosophical question because there are some people in brain theory, which is basically a derivative of string theory. There's an idea, and it's just hypothetical, that there may be two brains, which are basically membranes, rolled up multidimensional strings at Planck's dimensions stretching out to infinity, that actually collided and created our universe, our so-called Big Bang construct. This cyclic brain model believes that there may be alternative constants in different universes. And then you've got people like Andre Lin, who has this idea of a multiverse. And he thinks that maybe in various types of universes, we have just one of them, there may be a whole new set of constraints and constants there. Yeah. We have no proof of those, but all we have is the constants that we've been observing. And we have no absolute proof that some of these aren't going to be variable based on different constructs. I mean, it was Paul Dirac that even believed that some of the constants of light were changing and some of the constants of thermodynamics were changing. So I can't state with absolute certainty whether these are absolute constants multiversally or whether or not they are just what we've seen within the time frame we've observed them. But I suspect that some of these are conserved. There's a great indication and meaning behind them. I don't see any evidence really going against them other than hypothetical. So I use those the best I can with what models we have until I am proven wrong. And that's what we have. So the conservation of energy, the conservation, these are all nether theorems of symmetry. Conservation of baryon number, lepton number, that's mass, energy, linear momentum, angular momentum, charge, strangest number, time. These are all symmetries that we appear to be pretty conserved in everything we've studied.
So one of the terms you brought up there was, you know, alternate universes, alternate dimensions. Do you believe we have an ability to access other dimensions? Like, obviously, our consciousness is extremely limited by our ability to perceive our reality. But are there people on the planet, or do you believe there's a way to start walking down the path of consciously accessing different dimensions?
Well, first of all, we have to ask, what exactly do we mean by dimensions? There are different theories. Right now, up until the time of Minkowski, Hermann Minkowski and Einstein around 1905 to 1918 or so, we had a construct that we lived in a three-dimensional universe, a Cartesian grid. Then we had time. The things were moving around in time in a three-dimensional grid. Then there are people came along that came along and said, no, there's six dimensions. There's four that are spatial and there's two that are time. Then they had others that had three dimensions of time and three dimensions of space. There's different theories mathematically that are plausible theories that could exist. Then we have what is called Riemann and Hilbert space, complex mathematics that add new dimensions. Then we have the construct of Klein and others that basically believe that there's all kind of multi-dimensions rolled up into one dimension. This is what string theorists have ideas of. I can't say. These are mostly mathematical and hypothetical languages that we can't prove or disprove yet at this stage. We know for a fact that our senses are primarily limited to these four dimensions that we normally live in. But we can certainly theorize and certainly mathematicalize these other dimensions. So I can't prove or disprove on that, but I know that a person under some sort of a brain damage or brain chemistry changes or whatever can certainly access things that don't seem to be real in this world. And that with that, we have those dimensions, but most of them are dissociated psychotic states, we call. But who's to say? Maybe they live in a dimension that is more profound than ours. I know that if we look at John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, who created the work that he did, he was schizophrenic and he lived in an alternate world, but he actually used that to his advantage. So I can't say that this world is the only world with certainty, but I can say that this is the one we're working in, and it's a magnificent one that we're working in, so we might as well use the four dimensions that we use. There's a lot we can do with that, but I can't prove the other ones yet.
There seems to be a huge shift in our reality happening now in this consciousness revolution, evolution. And everyone wants to accelerate their journey. A lot of people are going down the route of using psychedelics. Do you think there is a mechanism of accelerating this consciousness shift and conscious awareness? And you know, the second follow-up to that is, do you think that psychedelics play a role in that?
You know, I get asked that quite often. My experience is when people live by what their values most, their highest value, they accelerate their achievements at the most efficient way. Mm-hmm. Proteus's law of least action is expressed perfectly in that state. And I think that's easy to demonstrate and quite easy to prove. Now, when you're dealing with psychedelics, you're dealing with brain chemistry. And right. Many people think that those are real, but they're really brain aspects. If you take and stimulate with electrical or magnetic stimulation certain regions of the brains, you can induce God experiences or spiritual experiences or metaphysical dissociative states that are not of this world. There'll be combinations of brain firing, and they're combinations of things you don't see in this reality that aren't normally in the pathways. Can that help the person? Could. Depends on what their mind is functioning from. This could be a way of remyelinating new pathways in the brain and give them a new way of looking at things. So it has the potential to do that, but I can't guarantee that's going to do that. I've certainly seen enough people that spin out and dissociate and end up working against themselves with the drugs if they use them excessively. But I've also seen some people who utilized them and expanded their awareness and played a new way of looking at life. So I think there's a place. I think they've been used for centuries, millennium. And I think that if they're used wisely, then they have a place. But I don't think it's just a recreational entertainment. I think it needs to be used wisely. That's all.
Understood. So the framing of my podcast is ultimately living your greatest life in your greatest body. Once people have gone through your 13 value determinants, what are some of the next steps you recommend people going through to truthfully start to understand their place in the universe and how to really make the most of this time here?
Well, the question that you want to ask is, you have a finite time here. And you have so many, quote, hours in a day, 86,400 seconds in a day, basically, and 12 hours day and 12 hours night, supposedly. You have so many finite seconds. The question is how do you use them? And if you don't fill your day with the highest priority actions, you'll devalue yourself. So you got to ask yourself, what is it that I'm going to fill my mind with? So if I'm going to read, what am I going to read that's highest in my priority that's going to help me fulfill my life the most? Who am I going to hang out with? What are the highest priority people I would like to hang out with? What are the highest priority actions I can do at home or at work? What are the highest priority social interactions I can do? What's the highest priority things I could be viewing and putting and feeding my mind visually or auditorily? I would think it'd be wise to prioritize your life, because that's the thing that allows you to magnetize opportunity. If you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, it is designed to fill up with low priority distractions that don't. When you have a high priority agenda, it's easy to say no to lower priority distractions. Everybody around you has got a different set of values, and they're imposing and projecting those values onto you daily, trying to vie for your attention to get what they want. And if you're not able to say thank you, but no thank you, and prioritize it, and then do what's important to you in a way that serves other people, you won't make the income to delegate lower priority things, and you'll trap yourself. So high prioritization is probably the wisest thing we can do in both business and home. Or otherwise, we'll have a quiet life of desperation doing lower priority things instead of a life of inspiration doing the highest intrinsic value.
One of the things that I'm a huge proponent of, as you just mentioned, is daily habits, routines, and rituals. What are some of the daily habits, routines, or rituals you implement to make sure you're making the most of these 86,400 seconds?
Well, for many years, this is over 30 years ago, I learned to ask myself every day, what is the highest priority action or actions I can do today to help me fulfill my mission on Earth? So I got clear about my mission starting at age 17. And then I just kept asking, what are the highest priority actions I could be doing today, right now, that can help me fulfill my mission on Earth? And I kept those on index cards, 3x5 index cards. And I wrote down 7 of them, the highest priority actions, 7 highest priorities that I could do. And I kept those. And I kept them in the index box, in card boxes, you know, like they had little 100 packs and you put them in 1,000 box. And then I went back over them and I looked at what was the highest priorities of the highest priorities over a long period of time. And I identified, in my case, research, write, travel, teach. These are the ones that were the highest priorities that repeatedly showed up. So then I basically decided that everything else is going. I'm going to delegate everything else away. So I delegate everything else. I don't drive. I haven't driven since 28 years almost. I haven't cooked since I was 24. Anything that's low in my values, I delegate to specialists that have it high on theirs so they can be inspired doing what I don't want to do, so I can be free to do what I'm inspired by. And that allowed me to earn way more and have the life that I have today, traveling the world and doing what I love. And I found that I asked that question, where would I love to travel? Highest priority things. What would I love to be doing with my hours in a day? By going through that, I found that a crucial thing, and I did that. So now I know I don't even have to do that. I know what it is, and I just stick to it. And I find myself by doing that, you could top it up by saying, what's the highest priority action I can be doing this moment that can help me fulfill my life? Because your life is fulfilled based on your congruency. And if you do that, you're going to get the most out of life, and you're going to be able to ripple effect that into the difference you make in other people's lives. Because everybody's yearning to be authentic, and your highest value is your most authentic self. And when they see people living that way, they're drawn and magnetized to them, and they automatically want to learn from that individual and see that in motion so they can follow in suit.
Wow. So obviously you've been living this reality for 46 years. It's become habit. You're living your seven high priorities every day. Do you still have a daily introspective time to allow you to assess and be alone and go inside your own conscious and create awareness?
Yeah, I have people in different parts of the world that are all participating in my agenda. So what I did is I typed up an agenda. My highest priority in my agenda is sharing through either keynote speeches, seminar presentations, workshops. That's highest. The second underneath that would be obviously podcasts, webinars, and any form of social seminar expression. Then there would be consulting, and underneath that would be then TV, radio, newspapers, magazines, or any form of social magazine interview formats or writing articles. I put out 40 to 70 articles a month on average. And then underneath that, I go into doing my research, automatically goes into research or business meetings. It'll oscillate. And then the research, that's the rest of the time is research. Underneath that, I have also my social interaction that's going to be conducive to doing what I want to do on my mission. So I have a hierarchy of values in my daily agenda. And then I have specialists around the world that help me, publicists that are involved in that, seminar promoters are involved in that. And it goes into a master center where they all are pitching in, and it has to go by that priority system. And then I get that printed out, and then I have that in my feet pretty well every day. It's sitting in front of me right now as I'm speaking. And then I have a day that's full. I don't ever have a day that's not full. It's full each day. It may be with research. It may be with interviews. It may be speaking. Whatever it is, it's full, because I know that if I don't fill my day with high priority actions, it fills up with other people's stuff. And opportunists are constantly surrounding you to vie for your attention. And so I do that, and I have people now that follow that format. I gave them the priorities. They have to follow those priorities. That's their job, to fill up my day to make sure it's filled. Other than that, it goes into research, under that, it goes into family and relationships. So that's not my highest priority, but that's down underneath that.
If I wanted the quickest path to downloading Dr. DeMartini's brain, where would I start?
I don't know if you want my brain. I think it's wiser to want your own brain.
The information in your brain, meaning, you've got a number of books, and there's a number of articles, obviously, and there's podcasts, and there's YouTube, there's keynote speeches. So the first thing I do is then link to your 13 value determinant site. And I want everyone to go there right away and get this done, because ultimately, like you said, if we're not doing these things, we're not providing our greatest contribution to the universe. Subsequent to that, I want to know, for my own benefit, what's the next step for me as far as downloading everything that exists in your brain?
Well, I don't know. I have 76 courses that I teach. There's 365 days, about 14-hour days in each of those, if you put them all together. Yep. So, you know, it depends on what your intrigue is and what your values are and what's the priority to you. But usually what people do is they come to an evening event like I'm doing tonight. You know, I'll be doing a presentation, basically the science of getting what you want. That'll be the speech tonight. And then what will happen is if there's an interest there for people, they may go online and explore what's all the complimentary information I have on there. There's thousands of articles in my media library that they can read, or there's thousands of radio and television interviews. There's an educational thing on my website free for people. They may go on that, and some people will stay for months on there working and just going through videos and reading articles and things of that nature. Or they may go on in my shop, my store there, and they may buy some books or some of the 100 CDs or so that I have out there. And then from there, they may go on to the Breakthrough Experience. The Breakthrough Experience is my basic kind of entry signature program that I've done in 63 countries, and about 90,000 people have attended. And this program is about starting to take command of your life. So some of the things we're talking about here, I show people basically how to start this thing going. Then I may have another program called the Prophecy One Experience, because I believe that you could be a prophet of your own destiny. And that's 7 days long on mastering all seven areas of life and leadership, waking up your leader inside, your global leader. And I have different programs that go on from there that are much more vast. Like I say, 76 courses. And that goes all the way to taking people on to various locations in the world and meeting social leaders and religious leaders and political leaders and things like that, where we actually go and meet people and explore the culture. So I have different courses that are involved, and it depends on where they want to go. And there's no right or wrong. There's no morality to it. It's just whatever it is that inspires you.
Dr. DiMartino, you're such a great contribution to, you know, human consciousness, human evolution. Are you doing things on a day-to-day basis to take care of your physical body? Like, what does your daily routine look like around nutrition, around exercise? Obviously, you're in very good physical shape and physical health. I'm just curious how you still manage to integrate, taking care of this, meat suit.
Well, you know, my breakfast consists of usually – I drink water in the morning, and then for breakfast, I'll have some yogurt and some fruit and some grains. At lunch today, I had a salad and some salmon and some multigrain bread. Dinner tonight, I'm having a dinner with Paul Chowdhury, who's a famous comedian here, and we'll have probably some sort of fish and vegetables. I eat relatively well, I believe. And I drink juices, vegetable juices, not a lot of fruit juice, but a lot of vegetable juices. And I drink mainly water. I haven't had coffee. I've had 3 cups of coffee my entire life. I haven't had tea really, except some sort of herbal tea. I don't drink anything else but water, basically. And so I don't overeat. I'm very disciplined on that. I eat to live. I don't live to eat. And so I've never been overweight or anything like that. So I figured that that's wiser to do caloric restriction. And I do some calisthenics and some yoga and some stretching and a few push-ups and sit-ups and things of that nature. Nothing major. My girlfriend sometimes gets me in a gym, but I'm not a fan of that. I just do that occasionally. I do a lot of walking. And on my 65th birthday next year, I'm going to the North Shore and surf big waves again, because I did that when I was young, and I had a goal. I set that at 16, that I would come back at 65 and ride at least a 20-foot wave. So that's my goal on next year. So, that's it. I don't have but a simple life and drink a lot of water.
So short of, all the education you're doing and the research you're doing, is there anything specific you're doing? You know, everyone's in this realm now of trying to upgrade their biology, upgrade their brain. Is there anything you're doing supplementally or, any daily practices you have to upgrade your biology or your brain?
Well, I do take a supplement, a Bluebonnet nutrient, multi-nutrient, multi-mineral supplement, and some vitamin C. But I don't take any, I haven't had a drug in my body, not an aspirin, not an antibiotic, not one drug in my body in 46 years. So I don't have any drug use of any form, not even an aspirin. I haven't needed it. There's no reason for it. So I've been pretty good on that. I do see that by standing on stage a lot, I have to stretch my neck and shoulders back, because sometimes being over stage, you're looking down, and that's a burden to the shoulders and neck. I do sometimes, because I probably sit more than ideal, I have to kind of do some sort of movements on my legs. But overall, I'm doing pretty good, I think, for 64 years old almost.
Good for you. And as far as what the amount of travel you do, you don't have any system you integrate as far as resetting from jet lag.
You know, I don't get jet lag. I don't ever notice things like that. I'm too focused on what I want to get done to even be focused on that. The more present you are, the less you're in time. And I don't, you know, I've done over 18 million miles in travel. I'm going on 19 million now. And Bobby, by next year, I'll get that 19 million mark. I do a lot of traveling. And people say, you know, you glow tonight on the stage. And I say, well, I'd probably be radiating.
And you still sleep well?
I still sleep. I used to sleep 4 hours a day for probably 35 years. But today, now, I do have to get up sometimes and pee in the middle of the night. So I have to be careful on drinking too much water at night. It'll wake me up. And that means where I have to get back and I go back to bed. So I think that's part of what goes on in your 60s. So I have to get up sometimes in the middle of the night. And I'm hoping that's what it is. And but that's pretty normal, I think, for my age.
Well, sir, you're truly a blessing to the human race, and I truly feel grateful for having any amount of your time, let alone this amount of time. So, Dr. DeMartini, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for your lovely questions, and thank you for caring enough about people to keep bringing ideas to them that can enhance their life. I mean, what's greater in life than making a difference in people's lives? That's what it's all about. That's our meaning in life. Thank you.
1,000%. And I plan to be a regular attendee at your seminars. As soon as we find some in the U.S. or Canada, I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, we'll be coming up to one in Toronto here very shortly, and then in New York later.
That's where I'm from, so I'll probably see you there.
Well, just a few weeks, we'll be there.
Wonderful, sir. Thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful day. So what did you guys think of Dr. DeMartini? As you could see, my level of interest was extremely high, and some of the things he was talking about were just well beyond my realm of comprehension. But what he did was open a lot of doors to start asking better questions for both myself and you. So the first thing I suggest you guys do is head on over to Dr. DeMartini's site, which I'll link to in the show notes, and go through his really easy to follow system to determine your values. So the things that we talk about is just as simply, how do you fill your space, time? Where do you gain energy? What do you spend your money on? These are going to be the most obvious things that can determine what your values are. He talks about where are you most organized? Where are you most disciplined, inspired, and focused? What are you thinking about? What do you visualize? What do you want? And these are questions that, if you haven't already written these down, one, do that right now. Two, head over to his site, because these are the questions he asks, and he gives you a really easy system to determine these things. What is actually coming true in your life? Because if it's not coming true, you're probably not placing enough of your time, focus, and energy on those things to allow it to come true. Because the reality is, if you focus on something hard enough and you put all of your energy and focus into it, it has no choice but to come true. It always does. What is your internal dialogue? Where are you inspired? And what do you read and what do you study? These are the things that are going to determine what you actually value in life. And without those things, how do we know how to live our greatest life? Tremendous conversation. And for me, I literally felt I needed to turn my brain up about 10 notches to start to understand and think about all these things that he was talking about. And if you felt the same, you may want to go back and listen to this conversation again. I know I will at least a number of times, you know, before we let it pass out of our focus. You know, we spend so much of our life trying to consume information, and it shouldn't be about consumption. It should be about understanding. So right before you move on to the next podcast, go back and listen to this one again if it was something of interest to you, and actually get something out of it, right? We don't read books for the sake of reading books. We read books to learn. We don't exercise to say that we exercise. We exercise to get results. And this is a big paradigm shift for us. So spend some time learning, understanding before you move on. If upgrading your brain is something you're interested in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Four Sigmatic, because this is something I've been doing for 6 months. And I noticed, honestly, a tremendous difference in my processing speed, in my ability to retain information, recall information, my ability to verbally recall words when I'm having a conversation on these podcasts. If you guys go back to the original podcast, I was never really great at having a conversation. I was really never really good at coming up with great questions. But the more I do it, the more I practice, and the more I upgrade my consciousness, I upgrade my brain, the better I get at this stuff and actually staying engaged in a conversation and giving these people good, insightful questions. And one of the things I'm doing daily is about 3 grams of lion's mane that I get from Four Sigmatic. I'm also doing nighttime Reishi. I'm also doing Chaga. And now that I'm climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, I've been experimenting with cordyceps while on a ketogenic diet. And cordyceps has been proven to have tremendous benefits to the aerobic system. So as far as improving endurance, improving output, cordyceps. So if you guys want a link to a discount on Four Sigmatic, I'm going to hook you guys up in the show notes, because Four Sigmatic's been taking care of me, and it's an amazing company with an amazing mission around joining the mushroom movement. I hope you'd enjoy the show. And as always, I would love a review. Tell Dr. DeMartini how awesome you think he is, and tell me how awesome you think I am. Have an amazing day, guys. Live your greatest life in your greatest body.